Order of the day. Bills, first and second reading. 1. A bill for an act to amend the European Parliamentary Elections Act 2004. The Honourable the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to move that a bill for an act to amend the European Parliamentary Elections Act 2004 be read a first time.
I now put the question, which is that a bill for an act to amend the European Parliamentary Elections Act 2004 be read a first time. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Carried.
The European Parliamentary Elections Amendment Act 2014.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to move that the bill be now read a second time. Mr. Speaker, this bill is really the fruit of an initiative by the former Clerk of the Parliament, Mr. Melvin Farrell, who thought it was appropriate to suggest some updating of the European Elections Act 2004, and I'm grateful to him, as I'm sure the whole Parliament will be, for having approached the government on the subject. Essentially, Mr. Speaker, this is a housekeeping bill. The highlights really are as follows. In Section 2, dated references to accession state and similar dated references are removed, and reference is now made to the Treaty on the Functioning of the European Union instead of the EC Treaty. In Section 4, the definition to the Treaty of Athens is omitted. In Schedule 1 of the Act, a more precise definition of 2004 regulations is now given for the sake of greater certainty and clarity. Honourable members will, of course, know that the 2004 regulations are the UK instrument which governs much of the substance of Gibraltar's participation in European parliamentary elections. Also in Schedule 1, references that are specific to the 2004 European parliamentary elections and which are ipso facto irrelevant are expressly repealed. Mr. Speaker, the updating I've referred to needs to be reflected in the canvas form for electors, and that form is therefore being replaced precisely for that reason. The government is also taking the opportunity in new subparagraph 3F1 of Schedule 1 of the Act to allow for two additional interim publication dates of the Register of Gibraltar Electors for European parliamentary elections. This is in keeping with a change introduced in the United Kingdom, and we consider it appropriate and right to introduce the same reform here. It will maximise the opportunity for enfranchisement, as individuals will more easily be able to check whether they are on the register or not, and to rectify their non-inclusion in good time should they be eligible to vote. Mr. Speaker, I commend the bill to the House.
Before I put the question, does any honourable member wish to speak on the general principles and merits of the bill?
Mr. Speaker, very briefly, Mr. Speaker, I rise just simply to echo what the Chief Minister has said. It's a housekeeping, tidying up exercise. And certainly, again, from the opposition benches, we would also like to extend our thanks to the thoroughness of the former Clerk of the House, Melville Farrell, for his suggestions and for his work in relation to this bill. So the opposition will be supporting the bill.
I now put the question, which is that a bill for an act to amend the European Parliamentary Elections Act 2004 be read a second time. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Carried.
The European Parliamentary Elections Amendment Act 2014.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to give notice that the committee stage and third reading of the bill be taken today, if all honourable members agree.
Do all honourable members agree that the committee stage and third reading of the bill be taken over today?
Aye.
2. A bill for an act to appropriate further sums of money to the service of the year ending on the 31st day of March 2015. The Honourable the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to move that the bill for an act to appropriate further sums of money to the service of the year ending on the 31st of March 2015 be read a first time.
I now put the question, which is that a bill for an act to appropriate further sums of money to the service of the year ending on the 31st day of March 2015 be read a first time. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Carried.
The supplementary appropriation 2014-2015 Act 2014.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to move that the bill be now read a second time. Mr. Speaker, this bill seeks a further appropriation in excess of that countenance at the time of the budget debate in July. The further appropriation is for the purpose of funding the University of Gibraltar, a project which we have recently brought to fruition on the terms already announced by the Honourable Minister for Education and I at a press conference last week. The project is one which I am sure all sides of the House will agree is a great step forward for our community. Indeed, from what I heard of the debate during question time this morning, there is broad agreement across even the wide political divide here about the desirability of this project succeeding. It could not be otherwise, Mr. Speaker, for the founding of the University of Gibraltar has been a project long trailed by more than one political party in past elections. Well, Mr. Speaker, it is those dreams which we are now in the process of making a reality, taking one small step at a time. I know the Minister for Education gave a very full answer this morning, detailing aspects of how the university would work. I don't want to repeat myself this afternoon, again setting out what the Minister said, and I will therefore simply refer the House to his earlier statement. But, Mr. Speaker, if we want a university, we have to fund it, and that is what this bill is about. I certainly believe we should be funding the university, and I therefore commend the bill to the House, with the caveat that any details of expected spending raised in the debate will best be replied to by the Minister for Education. I commend the bill to the House.
Before I put the question, does any honourable member wish to speak on the general principles and merits of the bill?
Mr. Speaker, the matter has been exhaustively debated in question and answer session this morning, so there's very little, if anything, that I'm going to be adding on behalf of the opposition, simply to say that we will be supporting this bill. We very much welcome the statements made by the Honourable the Minister for Education this morning, that the £10 million that is going to be appropriated today is the effectively envisaged outlay, not only for this year, but over the next couple of years. So that deals with some perhaps lingering concerns that I may have had, because of course we are concerned about how much exactly it's going to be costing in the short term. And indeed, carrying on as well from the tradition of at budget time always voting in favour of the bill that's presented at budget time, so as not to deprive the government of the day of the obviously opportunity to be able to fund not only its projects but the running of government. And although we could have perhaps taken a different view in relation to this bill, for the reason that we support the aim, and for the reason that the £10 million. Will not only cover the initial outlay for this year, but also the expenditure for the next 2 to 3 years, we will be supporting this appropriation bill.
I now put the question. Sorry.
Mr. Speaker, this morning when we ventilated this matter, these matters, I expressed the hope and indeed the expectation that this is a matter that would enjoy cross-party support, both from the point of view of the concept of the university and the need to fund the university. And I explained that this is something, again, as the Chief Minister has alluded to, that it has been at the back of the minds, and in fact possibly more at the forefront in more recent years of other political parties over the years. And we're very glad to be able to bring this matter forward, to have the specific plans and to see this matter taking this university, which is going to be a pride of place for all Gibraltarians, taking shape. It is good, and we welcome the fact that the opposition, as hoped for by us, does in fact support the concept of the university and the funding for the university. All other matters were set out extensively this morning, but I'm very glad that this project, which is a much valued project for the whole community and will see enormous benefits, has indeed cross-party support.
Speaker.
The Honourable Dr. John Cortes.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to just make a few comments here. I have a huge personal interest, having moved in the academic world. In fact, once upon a time I hoped I would become an academic, but I finished up here instead. But I have a huge interest in the subject. I'm very pleased that I have been involved with my own department and at a personal level in working with my honourable colleagues' team in developing the natural sciences ideas. Also, with the School of Health Studies, we work very closely together. Having a university in Gibraltar will clearly enrich our community and will serve to produce ambassadors in a wide range of subjects across the world. I'd like to say that I too have noted the excitement in the circles in which I move. I had the honour of hosting a workshop on sustainability in higher education earlier on this year with representatives from universities across the Mediterranean, both the European and the North African side of the Mediterranean, as well as organisations such as UNEP and the Mediterranean Office for Environment, Culture and Sustainability. And everyone there was extremely interested in working and excited about Gibraltar having a university. And finally, I think that I have to place on record the congratulations to the Minister for the for Education and his team, who I know have been working hard in bringing this project to fruition.
Any other honourable member wish to contribute? Chief Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, because it's an appropriation bill, I think some members have thought that this is an opportunity to have a State of the Nation's University debate. So enjoyable as that might be, we're taking baby steps in establishing this university, and I'm very grateful to the Leader of the Opposition for having indicated his support to the appropriation. The appropriation, Mr. Speaker, as we have, I think, already explained during the course of interviews and press statements and the things that have been said this morning in the House and I have said now, is not for £10 million to be spent between now and the end of the financial year, but it is an indication of the amount that the university will cost over a period of time. And therefore, although we're making the appropriation and seeking the appropriation, it is not going to be that we are going to be spending that amount before the 31st of March. I'm very grateful for everything that honourable members have said in support of this bill for an appropriation. And today is an important day in the life of the university because although we have taken steps in creating the company and in telling the public what it is that we're doing, it is when we vote the appropriation that we really are going to give life to this place of learning in our nation.
I now put the question, which is that a bill for an act to appropriate further sums of money to the service of the year ending on the 31st day of March 2015 be read a second time. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Carried. And with the appropriation having been carried, I think that I am allowed as a member of the previous generation. For me, this is a red letter day indeed. It's something almost undreamt of.
The Supplementary Appropriation 2014-2015 Act 2014.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I beg to give notice that the committee stage and third reading of the bill be taken today if all honourable members agree.
Do all honourable members agree that committee stage and third reading of the bill be taken today?
Aye.
3. A bill for an act to amend the Public Health Act. The Honourable the Minister for Health and the Environment.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to move that a bill for an act to amend the Public Health Act be read a first time.
I now put the question, which is that a bill for an act to amend the Public Health Act be read a first time. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Carried.
The Public Health Amendment No. 2 Act 2014.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to move that the bill now be read a second time. Mr. Speaker, this bill makes a minor amendment to the Public Health Act with the intention of inserting a new section, 252A, to allow for the introduction of regulation-making powers to provide for the naming and numbering of premises in Gibraltar and for the creation and administration of an official register of addresses. Mr. Speaker, there are a number of lists of addresses in government departments and agencies, Parliament being one for the Register of Electors, Land Property Services, the Health Authority, and so on. And it it has emerged, particularly in these days of GIS and wanting to have everything in an electronic format, that these lists do not all coincide, and therefore it is our intention to issue regulations so that we can have an official register of addresses and we can rationalise the naming and numbering of streets and premises in Gibraltar. And it is for this, I think, very practical purpose that I commend the bill to the House.
Well, I put the question. Does any honourable member wish to speak on the general principles and merits of the bill?
Mr. Speaker, I would like to say that we will be supporting the bill.
I now put the question, which is that a bill for an act to amend the Public Health Act be read a second time. Those in favour? Those against? Carried.
The Public Health Amendment No. 2 Act 2014.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to give notice that the committee stage and third reading of the bill be taken today if all honourable members agree.
Do all honourable members agree that the committee stage and third reading of the bill be taken today?
Aye. Number 4. A bill for an act to amend the Trustees Act. The Honourable the Minister for Education, Telecommunications and Justice.
Speaker, I beg to move, I have the honour to move that the bill for an act to amend the Trustees Act be read a first time.
I now put the question, which is that a bill for an act to amend the Trustees Act be read a first time. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Carried.
The Trustees Amendment Act 2014.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to move that the bill be now read a second time. Mr. Speaker, this bill remedies what we consider to be an omission in the current Trustees Act, which has been brought to the government's attention by members of the industry. In fact, it was first brought to our attention by the chairman of the Bar Council, and then we consulted members of the industry, including STEP, the Society of Trustees and State Practitioners, and they agreed with the proposal of the chairman of the Bar Council. In the United Kingdom, the Trustee Act contains Section 61, which provides a power for a court when dealing with cases involving breach by trustees to relieve the trustee, wholly or partially, from personal liability, provided that the trustee has acted honestly and reasonably. This power has been part of the UK since the Judicial Trustee Act 1896. An equivalent section is contained in Section 378 of the current Companies Act, which is Section 477 of the new Companies Act, protecting directors in similar circumstances. The government is in agreement with the proposal made by the industry that this omission should be remedied. This bill does this by means of inserting a new Section 19A into the Trustees Act in the same terms as the UK provision. I commend the bill to the House.
Before I put the question, does any honourable member wish to speak on the general principles and merits of the bill? Now put the question, which is that a bill for an act to amend the Trustees Act be read a second time. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Carried.
The Trustees Amendment Act 2014.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to give notice that the committee stage and third reading of the bill be taken today if all honourable members agree.
Do all honourable members agree that the committee stage and third reading of the bill be taken today?
Aye. A bill for an act to amend the Perpetuities and Accumulations Act 1986. The Honourable the Minister for Financial Services and Gaming.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to move that a bill for an act to amend the Perpetuities and Accumulations Act 1986 be read a first time.
I now put the question, which is that a bill for an act to amend the Perpetuities and Accumulations Act 1986 be read a first time. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Carried.
Aye. the Perpetuities and Accumulations Amendment Act 2014.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to move that a bill for an act to amend the Perpetuities and Accumulations Act 1986 be read a second time. Mr. Speaker, this is the first of several pieces of legislation connected broadly to the private client industry that the government will be introducing in the coming months. The impetus for this package of legislation has come from the financial services industry, including the trust sector in Gibraltar, with the backing of the Gibraltar Finance Centre Council. As a result, the government has put in place a comprehensive action plan to engage actively, systematically and decisively to address the industry's proposals for reform, many of which had languished for some years. Mr. Speaker, the bill to amend the Perpetuity Accumulations Act of 1996 that is before Parliament today accomplishes this in two principal objectives. Firstly, it provides for an increase from 100 to 250 years in the maximum period applicable to a disposition under the rule against perpetuities, where a perpetuity period is specified in an instrument. This increase means that interests created by the instrument will be able to vest more remotely than is the case at present. I should add that the bill is not merely prospective in achieving this reform. It will also allow for dispositions made prior to the commencement to be amended by deed so as to take advantage of the increased perpetuity period. Secondly, Mr. Speaker, the bill abolishes the rule against accumulations altogether for all trusts, except for charitable trusts, for which a maximum period of 21 years will now be stipulated, subject to the exceptions in Section 16, Subsection 4. This follows the consensus in developed trust jurisdictions that the rule restricting accumulations seldom serves any good public policy purpose in private arrangements, but to the contrary, does serve a good purpose in respect of charities, in that the latter should spend their income on charitable purposes and not retain it indefinitely. Mr. Speaker, I commend the bill to the House.
Before I put the question, does any honourable member wish to speak on the general principles and merits of the bill?
No, Mr. Speaker, other than to indicate that equally as we've done in relation to the amendments to the Trustees Act, we will also be supporting this bill.
I now put the question, which is that a bill for an act to amend the Perpetuities and Accumulations Act 1986 be read a second time. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Carried.
The Perpetuities and Accumulations Amendment Act 2014.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to give notice that the committee stage and third reading of the bill be taken today if all honourable members agree.
Do all honourable members agree that the committee stage and third reading of the bill be taken today?
A bill for an act to amend the Smoke-Free Environment Act 2012 and for connected purposes. The Honourable the Minister for Financial Services and Gaming.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to move that a bill for an act to amend the Smoke-Free Environment Act 2012 and for connected purposes be read a first time.
I now put the question, which is that a bill for an act to amend the Smoke-Free Environment Act 2012 and for connected purposes be read a first time. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Carried.
The Smoke-Free Environment Amendment Act 2014.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to move that the bill for an act to amend the Smoke-Free Environment Act of 2012 and for connected purposes be read a second time. Mr. Speaker, this bill amends the Smoke-Free Environment Act for 2012 so as to create an exception to the general prohibition of smoking. This exception permits smoking in certain parts of premises covered by a gaming operator's license in specified circumstances and sets out that parts of the premises whereby smoking is permitted under this provision shall not attract the additional discount introduced in accordance with Section 277B of the Public Health Act. Mr. Speaker, there is currently only one gaming operator's license in operation in Gibraltar, and it relates to the land-based casino in Ocean Village. As the premises is one in respect of which a license authorising the sale by retail of alcohol for consumption on the premises has effect, the power in the Act to make an exception by means of secondary legislation cannot be used. As such, it is necessary to make the change by means of a bill.
Mr. Speaker, by way of background, the Smoke-Free Environment Act 2012 imposed a prohibition on smoking in certain enclosed places that are open to the public or used as a place of work so as to ensure that the public have access to breathing clean air throughout Gibraltar. The Act contains a number of exceptions which include A. designated bedrooms in a hotel, guest house, inn or hostel being rooms set apart exclusively for sleeping accommodation, designated in writing by the person having the charge of the premises in which the room is situated as being a room in which smoking is permitted, which have a ceiling and except for doors and windows is completely enclosed on all sides by solid floor-to-ceiling walls, which have a ventilation system that does not ventilate into any other part of the premises except any other designated bedrooms, do not have any door that opens onto premises where smoking is prohibited, which is not mechanically closed immediately after use, and which are clearly marked as bedrooms in which smoking is permitted. B. Bedrooms or smoking rooms in care homes, hospices, prisons, and hospitals under the Mental Health Act are a similar criteria to those for designated hotel rooms. And C. Specified areas of specialist tobacconist shops, again, which meet similar criteria. The criteria included in this bill for the designation of parts of premises covered by a gaming operator's license go further than the requirements for similar exceptions already existent under the Act. The part of the premises must have a ceiling and except for doors and windows is completely enclosed on all sides by solid floor-to-ceiling walls. Secondly, does not have a ventilation system that ventilates into any smoke-free premises. Three, does not have any door that opens onto smoke-free premises which is not mechanically closed immediately after use. And four, be clearly marked as premises in which smoking is permitted. Additionally, the part of the premises must be approved for the purposes of the section of the Minister with Responsibility for Gambling in consultation with the Minister with Responsibility for Health and the Director of Public Health, and the approval is subject to conditions. There are mandatory conditions which must be included in any approval, and these are: A, notwithstanding any license which would otherwise have effect, the sale by retail of alcohol for consumption on the premises is not permitted within the part of the establishment to which the approval relates, and B, the part of the establishment to which the approval relates has a ventilation system approved for the purposes of this section by the Minister with Responsibility for Gambling in consultation with the Minister with Responsibility for Health and the Director of Public Health. There is also the power, Mr. Speaker, to add further conditions to the approval as the Minister with Responsibility for Gambling deems appropriate. I commend this bill to the House.
Before I put the question, does any honourable member wish to speak on the principles and merits of the bill?
Mr. Speaker, the opposition will be abstaining on the proposed amendment to the Smoke-Free Act of 2012, essentially because what this amendment shows is the complete incompetence of the current government when discussing and weighing the pros and cons of draft legislation in the first place. Back in September 2012, the minister, which was assigned by the government to drive the current law, the Honourable John Cortes, stated in his speech of the second reading, right at the beginning, the following words, quote, following the trend in many other countries and indeed a campaign led for several years in Gibraltar by several people, notably Mr. Brian Samid, there was a feeling in the community that we should catch up with the rest of the world and introduce legislation that would make the environment within premises and public vehicles free from smoke, unquote. We are entitled to ask the Minister now, having joined the rest of the world as a result of the legislation proposed then by the Minister for Health and the Environment, have we now descended back to that part of the world that does not take health and environmental matters seriously? Again, in his speech, the Minister for Health and Environment stated that exceptions will only be given to performers in a play where the artistic integrity of the performance makes it appropriate for the person to smoke. So in accordance with the new dawn of environmental standards,
of this government, as stated by the Minister for Health and Environment then, quote, in that we have gone the whole hog, so to speak, unquote. Grand words from a minister who early in his tenure in government wanted to show that he was an environmental warrior, a radical, bold, no-nonsense approach to his responsibility as health and environment, as an environment minister, one where the environment comes first and business second. The chief minister, not content to allow his minister take all the credit for this crusade among the environmental lobby of the time, also wanted to cash the votes of this group. He could not help himself, having a jibe against the GSD opposition by accusing us of not protecting the workers in private clubs and restaurants. This was a beauty contest between the Minister for Health and Environment and the Chief Minister in order to ingratiate themselves for the medals to be placed on their chest for those who fought for the legislation in the first place. So what has happened here, Mr. Speaker? Well, let me say so in blatter and not in meaningless, lawyerish gobbledygook. The government, in the form of the Minister for Gambling, has had a shock by having representative of the casino, threatening him that either the government introduces the exceptions to the general law applied in the existing legislation, or they will pack their bags and go. These kind of threats are not new in this industry, and it happens throughout the world. However, one would have thought that given the tone and manner in which the government proceeded with the existing legislation at the time and with the health and environmental fanfare it went to make maximalist statement at the time, that they would have had the strength and conviction to tell the gaming industry where to get off. Yet, this so-called environmentalist and socialist government collapses on the first hurdle. Gone is the environmental filter. The only filter to this amendment is to be provided by the Minister for Gaming, the Honourable Albert Isola. He will be the judge to decide now whether there will be more exceptions to the rule, and the Minister for Health and Environment will simply play second fiddle to the wishes of big business. Mr. Speaker, at the committee stage of the then bill in 2012, the Minister for Health and Environment stated in response to my colleague, the Honourable Isabel Elul Hammond, who had then asked if there was a particular policy with regard to guidelines for future exceptions to the rules under Clause 11.1, the Minister responded by saying he would have to consider the advice of the person who is qualified in this area, the Director of Health. In other words, the remit and the focus for consideration when the bill was being drafted was that this was to be a health and environmentalist approach to smoking in public places and nothing else. I clearly remember, Mr. Speaker, when I was a government minister, I had several conversations with the Director of Health then, and he was always adamant that smoking in public places was wrong and that it should be banned. He was categorical and unequivocal. The question is whether anything has happened since December 2012 that would have changed his mind so dramatically, if indeed he has changed his views now. Clearly, this is a significant humiliation for the Minister for Health and Environment, no matter how he may wish to disguise this under the so-called collective ministerial responsibility. If he still has the moral conviction for his principle that he so vehemently professes to have, the very least he should do is to abstain in the vote. Otherwise, it is another step in losing the confidence of the health and environmental lobby. Mr. Speaker, in politics, you cannot run with the hare and hunt with the hound. The government cannot pretend to be environmental warriors, go preaching around the world that we are world leaders in health and environment, and then capitulate at the first hurdle of business opposition. These amendments brought today to Parliament is the fruit of adopting populist themes for the purpose of getting votes and then turning their backs to those that deposited their trust for the policy they advocated at the last elections. It is a mess hanging around the necks of the members in government, and we in the opposition will have nothing to do with this mess. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, what an extraordinary statement this House has just received. To accuse the government of incompetence and not taking health and the environment seriously, and I'm sure there will be others here who will be able to defend the government's position better than I am. But one has to wonder, in the last 2.5 years, last year and last 2 years and 10 months, which planet has the Honourable Member been living in? Has he not seen what we have done? Has he not seen what we stand for? Does he not know, like the rest of Gibraltar knows, that this government's credentials on the environment are second to none and have never been seen in Gibraltar before? Does he not know about this government being a modern and progressive government that gives the environment the priority that it deserves? Does he not know that this government has always accepted that it has a moral responsibility and not just a legal responsibility? Because there are many directives that say exactly what we need to do. And we do these things not because they are a legal duty, but because it is right that we should do so. We have done so and we have shown so by our actions, and we will continue to do so for all the time that we are in office. It is in fact a pity, Mr. Speaker, that the honourable members did not do the same when they were in office.
Mr. Speaker, I mean, what my honourable friend has said, Mr. Neto, is absolutely right, in the sense that this has been, the honourable the minister who has moved this bill and I had a debate in the press during the course of summer. And, you know, the basic point that we made is that this is very clearly, and this is something which the honourable members opposite cannot conceivably deny, that this is a shift in position as stated during the course of the general election. And indeed, it is a breach of what they said in their Magna Carta, their manifesto. The manifesto very clearly states, and I quote, "We will introduce a ban on smoking in enclosed public places in Gibraltar." Well, they clearly have resiled from this. And indeed, possibly the same point and the same case could have been made when the Honourable the Minister for the Environment moved a bill, which is now the Act, in its original form, when it was littered with exemptions. And indeed, a general enabling provision, which is Section 11, which provides gives the Minister the power to pass regulations to provide for further exemptions. He is already on record in this House, indeed only in this session, as saying that he intends not to make provision for further exemptions to the smoking ban. But yet here what we have is a resilement of that position. And it is very clear that that is the case. And perhaps, Mr. Speaker, and I think what the Honourable Mr. Neto was saying, the basis on which this amendment is being moved is, if in effect, an economic and a business case. The Honourable the Minister, when he issued his press release, said very clearly that it is in order to ensure the continuing viability of this one particular economic entity, the one casino in Gibraltar, and to make it, you know, to allow it to continue to be fit for purpose. And the point that I made during the course of the debate through the press was, well, surely, if there is going to be that resilement from the position, the Puritan position of principle, which is no smoking in public places, then surely the same case, the same opportunity ought to be allowed to other businesses to make the same case to the government. Why is our primary legislation being allowed to be amended in order for one particular business to continue to be viable and fit for purpose? Why is it not the case that other businesses, other restaurants, for example, other bars, should not also be given the opportunity to make the same case to the government and allow them with all the conditions and safety, you know, requirements and all the rest of it, you know, separate rooms, no cross ventilation, all those conditions. So long as a business can say, I have the facilities to provide this service, and I want to provide this facility, this service, to my clientele. No alcohol will be sold in that section, all the rest of it. Why cannot another business make the same case? And clearly, they have, in my view, opened the floodgates. And if they're a government which has resiled from its position of principle, then they should do so, not only in respect of one business, not only in respect of this one casino, but also they should also give the same opportunity to other businesses. And that is the point that I wish to make, Mr. Speaker. Other than that, I understand what the Honourable the Minister says, that the, and he, I give him the opportunity to correct me if I'm wrong, that the regulation, or rather Section 11 procedure, wasn't available to him, or rather to the Minister for the Environment, to make regulations, because this particular premises is licensed to sell alcohol. I think that's the point he made in his delivery. And if I'm wrong, then I would ask him to correct me. But I make the same point. If there are premises which are other premises, other businesses which are licensed to sell alcohol, why can't they make the same case to the government?
Mr. Speaker, and that is precisely and very eloquently and concisely the reason why the opposition cannot support the bill. The opposition would have wanted to come to this House, despite the criticisms made by the Honourable Mr. Neto, well-made criticisms, political criticisms, would have wanted to come to this House and say, despite those criticisms, in the vault fast, the very clear U-turn that the government has done in relation to this, the opposition is nonetheless going to be voting in favour of this bill. But the reason why we're abstaining, not voting against, but abstaining, is because of the inherent iniquity of having a situation where other businesses in Gibraltar cannot meet the same threshold, the same conditions as this particular business, and be allowed exactly the same opportunity. And it's a question of fairness. And that is the reason we can't support this bill, and that is the reason why we're abstaining.
And if I could just add, Mr. Speaker, my small grain of thought. I mean, I was never greatly in favour of the abolition of smoking in the first place. I thought it would bring problems of this sort in its wake, and it's taken just a little bit longer than I imagined it would to emerge. But now that one has got used to a smoke-free regime, I suppose one should be grateful to the Honourable the Minister for the Environment for having had the courage to introduce it in the first place, because actually it does improve many environments. But what I would like the Honourable Member to answer, or yes, the Honourable the Minister for Gambling, obviously there is an element of tension in the very drafting of this bill. I mean, here is an amendment to a bill that was moved by the Environment Ministry. The amendment is moved by the Minister for Gambling because it affects gambling institutions, but he still has to consult with the Minister for Health. Well, we know what the Minister for Health's and Environment's views are. He expressed them when he moved the principal bill. So consult means say that you're going to do it and doing it whatever he says. I mean, that's what consult means, and that's fine. That's what consult means. Now, my point is this: the honourable minister could just address this point in his reply, that before the position was clear, the government has made a policy decision with which some people may agree, others may disagree, but it's a perfectly legitimate policy decision that workers and other users of public services, of services delivered in public places, should be protected from the potential dangers and discomforts of so-called passive smoking. Now, is the position therefore now that policy has been modified to read most but not all workers, and most, but not all, consumers of services delivered in public places. Because, of course, the workers who work in whatever premises are subsequently given the benefit of this, they will not enjoy the benefit of the government's policy to protect workers from passive smoking, and the non-smoking users of the casino in future, although for the non-smoking users I accept it's easier to accommodate because they can do it in a smoking room and non-smoking room, but for the workers, and they can have smoking rooms and non-smoking rooms and people, but for the workers, I suppose it could be done on the basis of volunteers. But still, does the government fear that this might undermine the more moral basis of the original policy, which is that the government had decided, rightly or wrongly, that this was something that all workers should benefit and all consumers should benefit?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I have heard some extraordinary things in this House in the time that I have been here, but none perhaps quite as extraordinary as the ones that I have heard this afternoon from the Honourable Mr. Neddo. This morning, when I was absent from the chamber, Mr. Neddo told the world from, I assume, a sedentary position like he is now, on that social media that we know as Twitter, that, and I quote him, "Once again, when we have a parliamentary session without the CM, the exchanges are without hostility and respect." Close inverted comma. I think he meant without hostility and with respect, but I will assume that the 140 characters that Twitter affords one did not enable him to clarify that. Well, Mr. Speaker, I was sitting very comfortably and had not shown any measure of hostility or disrespect to anyone this afternoon when we were subjected to what I must say was probably one of the most incredible political attacks that I have heard in the past 2.5 years since I was in opposition, Mr. Speaker, because, of course, when we were in opposition, we were subjected to all sorts of political attacks, but this was quite something. We were just cashing in votes. We were trading jibes. We were putting ourselves up for a beauty contest. Threatening was what the casino had done to us, that they would pack their bags and go, and we were therefore so-called environmentalists if we'd allowed ourselves to have our arms twisted, and so-called socialists. Well, not a Friday afternoon without hostility and with much respect then. But you see, honourable members opposite need to understand where it is that they are placed in order to be able to launch criticism of the government. They are representatives of a political party that was in government for 16 years, the 16 years during which the campaign led by many people, including the individual that honourable members mentioned in order, no doubt, to try and curry some favour with him, and yet they did nothing about it. So the Honourable, the former Chief Minister, has said that he did not agree with the principle and thought it could bring problems. Fair enough, that was their policy. But they had 16 years to take a Puritan road or a non-Puritan road and took no road. And then the Honourable Mr. Bosino says, you see, this is all a U-turn. It's a vote fast because, as the leader of the opposition put it, because your manifesto said you would introduce a ban in public places or smoking in public places, and now you've gone on to introduce exemptions to that, and therefore that is a U-turn because your policy, if it is that you are going to ban smoking in public places, full stop, cannot then admit of exemptions. Did I understand that point right? I think I understood it right. He's nodding his head, and it was very clear. Well, Mr. Speaker, you see, sometimes one has to be careful with one how articulates one's arguments, because page 47 of the GSD manifesto for the 2011 general election sets out their policy. And it's as follows. We will ban smoking in enclosed public places. Full stop. And then it carries on. A new sentence.
In private clubs, the decision will be left to the members. Restaurants and bars, which operate fully isolated and separately ventilated smoking rooms through which other customers do not have to pass, may allow smoking in them. We will make available measures to help people stop smoking. So it is obviously perfectly compatible to say we will ban smoking in enclosed public places and yet provide for some exemptions, which appears to be what the Honourable, Mr. Messina now thinks is entirely contrary to the principle of banning smoking in public places. Now, they would have done it in all of those instances, and we said we would not do it. And now just to link what Mr. Messina has said to the questions that Sir Peter has asked, how are we going to do it? Well, the mechanisms that will have to be put in place in order to comply with the legislation will mean that there will be an enclosed place into which no worker will have to wander until after all customers and all smoking has passed. And we consulted with Unite before we were prepared to approve a mechanism that allowed this. Therefore, workers will not be exposed to smoke, and individuals who do not wish to accompany somebody else into the smoke do not have to be exposed to the smoke. And the smoking area will be very much like the sort of enclosures that one sees at an airport. They will be absolutely awful places to go into, where all you will be able to do is smoke and play on a one-armed bandit. So what we have done is we have achieved the objective that we set out to achieve and continue to steer the course to ensure it is achieved for many generations to come. Children, young people, those who do not wish to be exposed to smoke, and workers who might involuntarily be exposed to smoke because they have to work and may not have a choice, will never have to be exposed to smoke. The only people who will be exposed to smoke are those who want to play on a one-armed bandit whilst they smoke. And they will not have any of the appurtenances of being in a commercial establishment that one might otherwise enjoy. They will not be able to eat and drink, they will not be able to do any of that, and they will have no service in there. And no worker will go in there until long after the place is closed down. When it is closed down, it will be a messy place, it will be a stinking place. I certainly will not be going in there, but we are told that there is a business case for it. And because that business case, done in that way, does not defeat the primary objective, therefore we are prepared to come to this House and allow it. That is not the sort of thing that they were prepared to allow, but clearly it is within the concept of banning smoking in enclosed public places, full stop. And when the Honourable Member goes back to Hansard and sees what he says and how he said it, he will see how what we are saying is within what it is that he suggested. Mr. Speaker, you know, well, let me, if he wants, I'll finish and then give way before I sit down. In explaining that we have done a vault fast, therefore, Honourable Members should have spent a little bit more time trying to understand what it is that we are doing. Because the type of environment that will be created and the types of places in which it falls to be created are places where there is no chance that a young person or a child will be remotely near the opportunity to have smoke blown anywhere near them. Casinos are casinos. Look, you could describe them, even without trying to be in any way negative about them, as a place of vice, if one considers gaming a vice. So in a place of vice, where already entry is to an extent restricted, in a particular corner, in a particular place, where workers will not have to enter, where children will have no chance to go, those who enter, in my view, to use a legal term, some of that gobbledygook that the Honourable Member has referred to earlier, those who enter will be absolute volants. They will be absolute volants. They will be volunteers, and I'll give way to Sir Peter as well before I sit down. Volunteers to be inhaling that smoke because they wish to be in that very tight environment, which will only have one-armed bandits and other smokers in it. Mr. Speaker, I'm quite happy to give way at this point both to the Leader of the Opposition and to Sir Peter.
Well, it's very reassuring, if I could say, that the Honourable Member has I mean, it would have helped if that had been explained in the presentation of the policy. It's all very well to complain that we haven't given thought to how they were going to do it, but of course, since they haven't explained how they were going to do it, it can hardly have been spotted. But it's nevertheless reassuring that that it will be done in a way that does not expose workers. Not because we wouldn't have exposed workers, because we wouldn't have done this, but because it doesn't undermine the basis of a policy when deployed in other places. And in that respect, I would just urge the honourable members to be very vigilant that this does not drift into a practice where volunteers are asked for, because honourable members know that when your livelihood is at stake, people volunteer for things that this law is designed to protect them against being forced to volunteer for in terms of workers. That's the first point. And the second point, and if the Honourable the Chief Minister will forgive me, I will read his answer in Hansard, is whether he doesn't accept that the very same things that he has said to, in my mind, sufficiently justify, if it is carried out in the way that he has described, these exemptions. Why? That might not be applied to other businesses if they can meet the same high standards of ring fencing. In other words, I know he's made the point that casinos are places in which children are unlikely to be found. If there was another sort of business in which it is unlikely that children were, or in circumstances where children could never be found, and that people who didn't want to smoke didn't have to go, in other words, there was a no smoking area equally, and that all the sort of things that he has just said, and that workers wouldn't have to go into, would the government then feel that a case might be made by those, and if the government doesn't feel, what would they say to such businessmen who then would not understand the distinction that was being made against them?
Mr. Speaker, I was going to make the last point that the Honourable Sir Peter has made. But in addition, I'd ask for this clarification from the Honourable the Chief Minister. I mean, I don't know how these games work. I've never gone to a casino in my life. But it is what the Honourable the Chief Minister is saying, that under no circumstances at all will there be any members of staff in this enclosure, for example, even in the dealing of cards. So it does not applicable, nothing at all. It just applies to, effectively, machines, one unbanded, and that is all.
Mr. Speaker, let me try and deal with the first point that the Honourable, the former Chief Minister made, the volunteers. This is an issue that is very live in the debate with Unite on this issue. They pointed this issue out as well. We were keen to ensure that there was no question of people being sought to be volunteers, because in an employment situation there is potentially no such thing as a volunteer. And therefore, that is an issue that's been taken up directly with the union and the casino, and something on which the union will be very vigilant in the casino, and we will be very vigilant of as well. But indeed, and the license will be issued in those terms, because what we're concerned about is that even with licenses issued in those terms, there are sometimes those who will suggest that, you know, they weren't even asked by their bosses to do it, but they're just trying to. So there will be a requirement that employees not be allowed in. So it's the other way round, right? So if I could just ask honourable members to imagine, in order to be able to deal with the next point more effectively, the type of enclosure that they see in an airport, going with the glass, and it will be a glass enclosure, it will literally be a smoking pit in a casino, fishbowl, with the glass all the way to the ceiling, with air conditioning systems sucking out, up and down the smoke, and only one-armed bandits in it. Now, that seems to be something that really you can only imagine in a casino. And people need to be pretty hooked on what they're doing. I mean, query whether these sorts of places should exist, but they exist and we license them, and we're the biggest territory in the world in terms of the online emanation of them. But look, we can't be looking out for everybody all the time. We're not a nanny state. So there are people who go to casinos, there are people who like to play slot machines, and there are people who smoke. So we're providing that sort of environment. It's, in my view, going to be a place where nobody is going to want to enter, but I'm told that many people will wish to enter it, despite the smoke, despite the sucking ventilation system, despite the glass, all the rest of it. So be it. Mr. Speaker, in that context, what other type of service might be offered in that way? You know, we are not talking about going down the route honourable members talked about going down, which is to have the smoking and non-smoking areas in restaurants. That we do not believe works. Although it was in their manifesto, we don't believe that works. We don't believe that even in private clubs you can have this without exposing workers. So we're not going down that road. So I suppose, you know, somebody might be able to make an argument that they could drop a hamburger into that sort of enclosure as if it were a sort of a drive-through, a smoke-through. But it's not reasonable to think that other businesses would be able to create enclosures of this sort, subject to this strict level of regulation, which might be able to survive without employees in them or something, because you have to have delivery of a thing into there. So we are very confident, Mr. Speaker, that therefore what we're doing is designed to deal with something which we did not foresee. And if I can then take the Honourable Gentleman to his final point, although we do not think that it is possible to deliver any other service in this type of smoking environment, look, the door is not going to be closed because there are more things thought of in my philosophy than perhaps than Horatio has thought of. So it may be that somebody comes up with something else, you know, where you have other opportunities for employees not to be exposed, the same type of ventilation, and all of those issues to be dealt with. None of them are the ones, if I may say so with respect to the Honourable Member, are the ones which are set out in the paragraph of their manifesto. In other words, it's not a restaurant, it's not a sort of private club. All of those we think expose employees in a different way. This is so constrained and so designed that, you know, when people see it, if perhaps somebody has heard half of this debate and goes away thinking the GSD is right, the GSLP is done a little fast, you know, this is really terrible, when they turn up in the casino and they see this enclosure, they'll think, oh no, my kids are absolutely safe, I'm absolutely safe, anybody who doesn't want to be exposed to smoke is absolutely safe. This is never going to be, as I think honourable members have given away by the questions that they've asked, in particular the Leader of the Opposition, that this was going to be perhaps an area of table gaming, which might be a smoking area, etc. This is not going to be anything like that. This is a glass cage, really, of the sort where I would ask even smokers not to go into. A final... Yeah.
Mr. Speaker, that is how they intend to implement this. This is how what the Honourable the Chief Minister is explaining is how the minister intends on this occasion, and perhaps this minister on every occasion, to exercise that discretion. But the law is not so curtailed. The law is not limited to the situations which he has described. And that really is a... But look, to the extent that it's implemented in the way that he is describing, I don't think...
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful for that, and you know the guiding principle here is public health, and the guidance of the public health authorities is that nobody should be exposed to smoke, and therefore it really is designed to comply with that advice, so that the way that we intend to do it is really the only way you can do it, so that only the volants are subject to the smoke, because only they then go in there. Mr. Speaker...
health, because I would not have offered even this degree of public health protection. This is not, we would not have done even this in terms of the prohibition. My angle of concern is, in a sense, legal discrimination. In other words, that some businesses should be allowed to benefit from a certain piece of legislation, a certain regime, and others not. I think what the Honourable Member has said, which I find satisfactory for the purpose, is that if there are other businesses that, unbeknown to him or that he cannot now imagine, nevertheless meet the same requirements, that the government be as open in those businesses as they will be with the criteria that they intend to apply to this business, they would be happy to apply to other businesses that can comply with the same criteria. And that certainly deals with my discrimination concerns.
Thank you. I'm grateful, Mr. Speaker. In fact, I would put it the other way. We will be not as open to their proposal. We'll be as harsh in testing it as we have been on this occasion to ensure that there is absolutely no potential leakage or seepage, not just of smoke, but of exposure to workers, etc. Now, seen in that light, what I would invite the honourable members to do, given that it appears that they had a different view of what was happening to what I've now been able to satisfy them of, to reconsider whether they do want to abstain on this, or whether, given that they have the comfort that nobody is going to be exposed to smoke, that we achieve and continue, achieve the primary objective and continue to steer the course in respect of that primary objective, that they should consider carefully whether in fact they want to abstain on this. You know, to an extent, I put it to them, Mr. Speaker, that the speeches that they have given are not speeches for abstention, they're speeches for voting against the measure. They didn't, in my view, Mr. Speaker, speak in a way that suggested that they had any reason for abstaining. Everything they said suggested that they would wish to object, and the Honourable Mr. Mussini wants to say something, I'll allow him to do so.
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful to the Honourable Chief Minister. There's one practical point which arises in my mind as to the exposure of, or rather the ability of workers to go into the enclosed area. But as I understand the position, certainly the press release says that they will not be required to enter the fishbowl, as I think the Honourable Chief Minister has put it. It means that if they want to, they can. I suppose they're free to enter. But what about if there are circumstances when they have to go in? Because, I don't know, there's a fight going on. Security needs to go in. But this is, you know, he scoffs, but actually this is a practical situation which could arise. So in other words, what I'm saying is that is it possible to have this sort of panacea that the Honourable Chief Minister is trying to sort of conjure up in our minds, which is, look, it's very exceptional, and only very exceptional, in fact, not exceptional circumstances. Nobody can go in, he's saying, other than those who want to smoke and play the one on bandits. So I'm putting that practical situation to him, and whether he can address it. And the other point is, just to end, is that in my view, Mr. Speaker, I think there is a world of difference. Therefore, the point that the Honourable my friend has made, Mr. Neto, and I made in my speeches, which is that this is a climb down, if you like, from the position as stated in the manifesto, it still stands, because there is a world of difference between what our position was in our manifesto, which the Honourable Chief Minister has read, and theirs. They didn't go beyond the smoking ban without any exceptions in all public places. That was their position, full stop. There was nothing after that. Yes, no, but then we go into the exceptions that we would have introduced. That's part of our policy. So I don't think, in all honesty, that particular argument, although he expresses it as usual with all the confidence, it can stand, to be honest. And I would encourage him, I know he won't, but I would encourage him to admit that it doesn't.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I didn't give way to allow him to make the same argument that he'd made before, but I will deal with it first. Mr. Speaker, look, if he's saying that a blanket statement, we will ban smoking in enclosed public spaces, which is the one we have and they have, does not admit of exemptions, we have it without exemptions, they have it, and then with exemptions following, then they did the volte-face in the same document, in the same paragraph of the first manifesto of their 2011 manifesto, they have both things. That which he says is absolute and not admitting of exemptions, and the exemptions. So is it that there's a volte-face within the paragraph? Look, I put it to him that there is not. And that what we are doing now, although they can try... Look, and I see politically the point they're trying to make. This is an attempt to make hay because they think we're doing a bit of a U-turn. There's a lobby out there, and they're going to give it a go. Look, fine, fair enough. That's politics. But let's be clear, that's what it is. And that when people turn up in the casino to see this dreadful vault fast that we have done, they will see this pit that no right-minded individual would ever want to go into. And they will say, this is no vault fast at all. This is the most properly thought out policy that there could have been in order to satisfy this requirement, which apparently there is, without failing to continue to steer the proper and appropriate course and achieve the objective. Look, words describe an objective. And what I'm saying to the Honourable Gentleman is, the words in the manifesto were set out there to achieve an objective, and we have achieved the objective, and we continue to achieve the objective, even persuading those who were not persuaded before. Because the Honourable, the former Chief Minister, has said that he was not persuaded before, but after we took the action, he is now persuaded and happy and would have done it before, and he said so himself. So I think that is a very good way of seeing how the effect of the measure has worked. And Mr. Speaker and the Leader of the Opposition...
Could I ask the Honourable Chief Minister not to give way anymore? Because the whole purpose of giving way... No, the Honourable Members have got it wrong. They don't know what the rules are. Whoever is holding the floor should give way in a debate, and that's what we are having here, a debate, for points of clarification, not for continuing to come up with new points or for continuing to argue the toss. It's for clarification only, in the nature of a personal statement of clarification, but not for toing and froing in the way that honourable members have doing this afternoon. I had noted it before, but I think that this afternoon it's becoming an abuse. And therefore I ask the Chief Minister to give way on this last occasion, but please, no more.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the other point that Mr. Rossino made...
And the other point is that I ought to make is that in committee, members have an opportunity, when considering any particular clause, to cover some of the similar ground again. So it's not that their right to speak is being curtailed, but I think we mustn't abuse the rules of debate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful for that guidance. I think the first point that Mr. Bosino made was a point of clarification, and I'll deal with it now. I don't think the second one was, for the reasons I pointed out. And if the Leader of the Opposition wants to make a point based on clarification, I'll give way to him now before I deal with the other point from Mr. Bosina.
Well, the point that I was going to be making about this is, I mean, it doesn't alleviate the concerns of the point that I've made and the point that Mr. Bosina has made, in the sense that that obviously these exemptions are just limited to the gaming industry. You see, if what you had was a general exemption. In other words, exactly the same wording, but it said, if a business fulfills the following conditions, bang, 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 and then has in its license certain conditions, then we would, then they could offer effectively this service. I think we would have supported it, despite all the other political criticisms about the fact that this is a vote fast or. Those are political points and the thrust of the debate, but we would have been in a position to support it. The reality is that there is nothing here, and I'd like it to the Chief Minister to confirm, there is nothing here that actually allows the government, I may be wrong, I mean, maybe he can clarify that, there is nothing here that allows the government to actually grant an exemption wider than in the gaming sector. In other words, this is not a situation where the government is introducing a list of conditions for the granting of an exemption outside the gaming, this particular gaming operator's situation.
Mr. Speaker, let me deal with that point first. There is no provision for non-gaming operators to have such an exemption. But as I've said to to SAPITA, if we were to receive representations from another sector where we could be persuaded that it were possible to provide services in this way, we might be persuaded to come back and make a further amendment. And what I'd say to the Honourable Gentleman is, look, as I have said and is now on Hansard, our brains are not, our minds are not closed to that, but representations have not been made by any group or by any body or by any business that has persuaded us that this is possible, other than by the operator of a casino. Casino has a particular type of business that it does, which, as I said before, could be described as one of vice, etc. So it's not a place, a general place to which many people have access. It's a very particular place, and it's not a place where children can wander, etc., etc. So we're not minded to change that, but you know, it is now on Hansard, and the Honourable Members have the benefit of it on Hansard, that we are prepared to consider any other type of business that might approach us. Now, the other point is the point made by Mr. Pocino, whether there would be no circumstances in which an employee might enter such a part of the premises. Well, look, we've looked at everything that could happen in the context of the business. But, of course, what we haven't done is say, in the context of an emergency, no one would be able to enter. I mean, if somebody sees a person having a heart attack, or what appears to be a heart attack, and out of the kindness of their heart they wish to go in there and try and pull them out or treat them, or if there is a fire and somebody wants to go in there to pull someone out, and we're not talking about a fireman, we're talking about an employee who is seeing this happen, well, look, I mean, I'm sure that in those circumstances somebody might enter, but it is clear that employees are not going to be able to enter to provide service, to service machines. If a machine has got stuck and money has been got stuck inside, there will be cameras and there will be remote monitoring of machines so that those things can be dealt with by a central cashier. The employee will not have to enter. So I think I can satisfy the Honourable Gentleman that other than in absolute extremis, in the sort of way that, you know, none of us are to touch the mace, but if I saw that somebody was having a heart attack over there and I run to try and help them, I might touch the mace in the process of doing so. We're not supposed to cross the line here, but if somebody were having a problem here, I'm sure the officer would come and try and give us first aid. So other than in extremis, there is no circumstance in which an employee will enter that area, right? And therefore, I think they should have the satisfaction that this bill does not open floodgates. This bill actually is designed to ensure that in particular circumstances, a particular type of business is able to provide this service in a way that is purposely not attractive, purposely avoids any employee having to enter there, purposely ensures that there is full ventilation of the place in which they are, and that there will be no escape of smoke to the general area. You know, we have, therefore, as I said before, in the original bill, achieved the purpose we set out to achieve, and this does not in any way waver that fact, does not in any way turn us away from that fact. In the 2.5 square miles by 1 square mile that is our lovely land, there will be a small area, perhaps 5 meters by 5 meters, where people will be able to smoke and play a one-armed bandit. Very small indeed. But for 2.5 miles... by 1 mile, what we set out at the standard, what we, the environmentalists, the socialists, the dreamers, set out as the standard, remains. We steered the course, and we steer her straight down the line as she goes.
Before I call the mover to reply, since there seems to be some surprise about my intervention, I'm going to read out Rules of Debate 45.8. A member who has spoken to a question proposed to the Parliament may again be heard, if the Speaker so permits, to explain some part of his speech which had been misunderstood, but when so speaking, he shall not introduce any new matter. That is the rule that applies. And that rule does not mean that any member that holds the floor can be giving way continuously in order effectively to perpetuate a debate. That is an abuse of the rules of debate. And that is my ruling.
Speaker.
Move on to reply. Yes.
Mr. Speaker, just a very brief comment. Clearly, as Minister for Health, I would prefer no smoking anywhere by anyone. But clearly, that is not realistic. I am, however, convinced that in the case of the bill before us, with the very strict conditions and arrangements, no one who does not want to be exposed to smoke will be exposed to smoke, nor will anyone who may be encouraged to smoke by seeing somebody smoking be anywhere near that area.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. just a couple of points. I think the major issues have been heavily debated already. I'd just like to make a number of observations, Mr. Speaker. It's ironic that if anybody would have heard the first line of the Honourable Mr. Nettle's speech, where he said, "We will be abstaining," and then sat down and listened to the rest of it, would have been quite surprised by the ferocity of the tone, particularly in the attack on my Honourable friend, the Minister for Health and the Environment. And it's particularly surprising, Mr. Speaker, because he's the one individual that I've worked most with in the 18 months that I've been in government dealing with this specific bill to ensure that the very protections that we're telling you about today were crafted by. And therefore, it just seems to me absolutely bizarre that the Honourable Mr. Nettle should be seeking to attack the individual who's had the most say in delivering the protective measures that this government has come up with to protect the very people that shouldn't be affected by smoke that they don't wish to be affected by. And that was the motive behind the original bill. And obviously, the Honourable Mr. Neto didn't care to listen to a word I said, because I hadn't even finished before he trotted up and read out his prepared text, which he was going to read out, whatever I said, which I found quite remarkable. But if he would have cared to have listened, he would have heard me say, by way of background, the Smoke-Free Environment Act imposed a prohibition on smoking in certain enclosed spaces that are open to the public or used as the place of work, public places, so as to ensure that the public have access to breathing clean air throughout Gibraltar. In other words, the individual has the choice. If he doesn't, if he wants to go to the casino and play on any of their games, he can do without having smoke in his face. That was the essence of the 2012 Act, and that essence is still totally protected by the provisions of this bill. Furthermore, as we've already mentioned now ad nauseum, the workers are also protected. And when you think what is actually going to happen in this very small space, almost £500,000 is going to be spent on ensuring that the place is enclosed, that the ventilation system that this area uses is totally separate, because that's in the legislation. If he's cared to read it, he'd see it, from the area that ventilates the remainder of the premises. Now, when you talk about these conditions, which is leads me on to the second point, you should know that when you moved the bill in 2012 and voted in favour of it, that you were already creating exemptions. You had exceptions already in that bill. I assume you knew that. And this is one more exception, one more exemption, which if this would have been on the bill, I'm sure you'd have voted in favour of it at that time. Now, I assume, for political motives and to have a go at my good friend, the Minister for Health, you've chosen to act otherwise. Mr. Speaker, Mr. Netta also said, "I remember when I was a minister, the Director of Health told me that smoking in public places was wrong." Well, that's a view that all of my colleagues on this side of the House share. The difference is that they've done something about it, we've done something about it, and he never, ever did. When he had 16 years of opportunity on that side of the House to do something about it, and he didn't. So to now come to this Parliament and say that the Honourable Minister for Health, the driver of that bill that came through so quickly in 2012, and who has worked so hard today to bring this bill. And let's be clear about one other point. This hasn't happened overnight. The application originally made was by Gala. That happened over 2 years ago. And my honourable learned friend, the Minister for Gaming at that time, was dealing with it. When I was elected, it was passed to me and I carried it on. It's not as though on the whim or on the back of an envelope, we've decided to do a deal with a casino to stop them from doing what I assume the honourable member is encouraging them to do, which is to pack their bags and go. Life is not quite that simple. And decisions have to be taken, which are often difficult decisions, challenging decisions. Yes, of course. I'm. Sorry.
I know he was in full steam, and I wouldn't have wanted to, I was willing to make the point at the end of his, just before he sat down. It's a point of clarification. Yes, the Honourable Member, Minister, does, he's absolutely right, and I think I made the concession when I spoke on the bill, that the bill now, the Act, which is now he's wanting to amend, did provide for exemptions, and he's absolutely right. But, you know, the exemptions that we were willing to concede and therefore vote in favour of are nothing of the sort that we're seeing now. The distinction that I make is that this is a business case which is being made. He said so, and he has admitted during the course of his speech and also during in the press releases. So that's his distinction. The exemptions there related to private accommodation, residential accommodation, specialist tobacconists and the like. In fact, the one that comes closest relates to, people who are long-term stay, basically where they sleep almost. The one that comes closest is the accommodation for guests in hotel, which you could say, well, maybe could that have been as a result of a business case? But I don't think so. I think the common denominator in many of these things is that people are, it's basically their own, almost like their own private accommodation where they actually sleep. So that's a distinction that I made, and I wonder if the Honourable Minister would concede that that is, I think, a reasonable one to make.
No, Mr. Speaker, I'm afraid I don't agree, and I'll explain why I don't agree. I was making two points. The exemptions you're referring to, which extend to, for example, bedrooms in a hotel. Well, workers go into a bedroom in a hotel. If you order room service and you're smoking, a worker will come into that room. So this situation is actually far, far better than the situation that you all accepted in 2012 when the Honourable Mr. Neto voted in favour. So, a prison, on each of the others, an inn, a hostel, there are staff involved. In this case, we've gone even further than that by ensuring that that doesn't happen. So, in respect of the exemption, I accept what the Honourable Member has said insofar as this is concerned. The 2012 Act allows exceptions to be made, but not where tobacco is sold on the same premises, not the area, but the entire premises. Alcohol, I'm sorry, my talking about smoke. Alcohol cannot be sold within the entirety of that premises. And so that's why the 2012 Act actually gave even more protection by saying if it's part of a bigger establishment where there is alcohol involved, you've got to come back to Parliament. And that was the intention, and that's what we're doing. So the steps that have been taken by this government in ensuring, as I say, after 2 years of discussions with the operator, who's going to invest close to £500,000 to ensure that everyone can be as protected as they possibly can be, bearing in mind that there are smokers in there, and I don't quite have the dim view that my Honourable Learned the Chief Minister does because I happen to smoke. But this pit to which he refers, I've made my damned best to make sure that it's as comfortable as it possibly can be in case I should go there. So the extent of the protection is that if somebody doesn't want to have smoke in their face, which was the essence of the 2012 Act that this Parliament passed, they don't have to. And on that basis, Mr. Speaker, I commend the bill to the House.
I now put the question, which is that a bill for an Act to amend the Smoke-Free Environment Act 2012 and for connected purposes be read a second time. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against?
Abstain.
The opposition abstain. Carried.
The Smoke-Free Environment Amendment Act 2014.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to give notice of the committee stage and third reading of the bill be taken today if all honourable members agree.
Do all honourable members agree that committee stage and third reading of the bill be taken today?
Aye.
Committee stage and third reading. The Honourable the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to move that the House should resolve itself into committee to consider the following bills clause by clause. The European Parliamentary Elections Amendment Bill 2014, the Supplementary Appropriation Bill 2014-15 Act 2014, the Public Health Amendment No. 2 Bill 2014, the Trustees Amendment Bill 2014, the Perpetuities and Accumulations Amendment Bill 2014, and the Smoke-Free Environment Amendment Bill 2014.
a bill for an act to amend the European Parliamentary Elections Act 2004. Clauses 1 and 2.
Stand part of the bill.
The long title.
Stand part of the bill.
A bill for an act to appropriate further sums of money to the service of the year ending on the 31st of day of March 2015. Clauses 1 and 2.
Stand part of the bill.
The long title.
Stand part of the bill.
A bill for an act to amend the Public Health Act. Clauses 1 and 2.
Stand part of the bill.
The long title.
Stand part of the bill.
The Trustees Amendment Bill 2014. Clauses 1 and 2.
Stand part of the bill.
The long title.
Stand part of the bill.
The Perpetuities and Accumulations Amendment Bill 2014. Clauses 1 and 2.
Stand part of the bill.
The long title.
Stand part of the bill.
The Smoke-Free Environment Amendment Bill 2014. Clauses 1 and 2.
If I may, there is. I have a letter prepared, just dealing with a very minor amendment to replace minister with responsibility for gaming, substituted by minister with responsibility for gambling.
Could I draw the attention of the honourable member to subclause, clause two, subclause two, small a. The third line, it reads, for consumption on the premises is not be permitted. I think there is either a word is not to be permitted, a word missing, or is not permitted. But that doesn't read properly. I think there is a typographical error.
Likewise, Mr. Speaker, I think...
In either case, the same meaning can be, the same purpose can be achieved either by adding the word to is not to be permitted or delete E is not permitted B.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, if I may seek to delete the B in the third line of clause 2, subparagraph 2A.
Likewise, Mr. Chairman, perhaps... Just above that, on that page where the B is, just above the two, it says the condition set out in subsection two is the condition set out in subsection two. Is that yeah.
Was a time when, with the Attorney General, a member of the House, he would just make a simple note of those typographical errors and they would go through the system. Now, unless the Minister for Justice makes himself responsible for that, maybe, and unless that happens, perhaps a small formal amendment should be moved.
If I remember rightly, Mr. Chairman...
That takes on the responsibility of, yes, of correcting typographical errors. Yes.
If I remember rightly, the
but I think members ought to decide whether, in the case of the one that I have drawn attention to, whether the word TO should be added or the word BE be deleted.
Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chairman, in both cases, an amendment has to be moved and passed, and then the clerk will make sure that the final version reflects what Parliament has done. And it seems to me that we are agreed that in the case of the B, we just remove the B in clause 2A so that it reads, the sale by retail of alcohol for consumption on the premises is not permitted. And in the previous 2.1b, which says the condition set out in, remove the second set out in. So it reads simply the condition set out in subsection 2, and such other conditions, etc.
Proper amendment, shall we were. Will the Honourable Member move it? It's given notice.
With pleasure, Mr. Speaker.
Do you wish to speak on the proposed amendment to clause 2? No. All in favour?
Aye.
Carried. So, clause 2, as amended, stand part of the bill.
The long title.
Is there a clause 3? Yes. Clause 3 as well. Next page.
Clause 3.
Stand part of the bill.
The long title.
Stand part of the bill.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to report that the European Parliamentary Elections Amendment Bill 2014, the Supplementary Appropriation 2014-2015 Act 2014, the Public Health Amendment No. 2 Bill 2014, the Trustees Amendment Bill 2014, the Perpetuities and Accumulations Amendment Bill 2014, and the Smoke-Free Environment Amendment Bill 2014 have been considered in committee and agreed to with some amendments, and I now move that they be read a third time and passed.
I now put the question, which is that one, the European Parliamentary Elections Amendment Bill 2014, 2, the Supplementary Appropriation 2014-2015 Act 2014, 3, the Public Health Amendment No. 2 Bill 2014, 4, the Trustees Amendment Bill 2014, 5, the Perpetuities and Accumulations Amendment Bill 2014, 6, the Smoke-Free Environment Amendment Bill 2014 be read a third time and passed. Those in favour of the European Parliamentary Elections Amendment Bill 2014?
Aye.
Those against? Carried. Those in favour of the Supplementary Appropriation 2014-2015 Bill 2014? Those against? Carried. Those in favour of the Public Health Amendment No. 2 Bill 2014?
Aye.
Those against? Carried. Those in favour of the Trustees Amendment Bill 2014? Carried. Those in favour of the Perpetuities and Accumulations Amendment Bill 2014.
Aye.
Carried. And those in favour of the Smoke-Free Environment Amendment Bill 2014.
Aye.
The opposition abstained. Carried.
Adjournment.
Mr. Speaker, on what you yourself have described as a red letter day, I have the honour to move that the House do now adjourn sine die.
I now propose the question, which is that the House do now adjourn sine die. I now put the question, which is that this House do now adjourn sine die. Those in favour?
Aye.
Those against? Carried. The House will now adjourn sine die.